Today is September 3rd, 1997. This is an interview with Corinne Sanchez, conducted by Maylee Blackwell for the Hijas de Cuauhtémoc Oral History Project.
Robert, if there's any parts that you want to delete later or whatever, that's fine. We can.
So let me review whatever. Okay.
If it's all yours. So do you want to start with just some of your background, your family background, where you were born?
Sure.
That kind of stuff?
I was born in San Bernardino, California in 1947. Family of 8 children, and a mother and father that stayed together, but was not a perfect marriage, but I had both parents. And I went to all the local schools there, elementary, junior high, high school. Then I went to San Bernardino Valley College, junior college, because I wasn't really college bound. I didn't know about college. So prerequisite wise, I wasn't prepared. And then secondarily, it wasn't something that was encouraged in the family. I wasn't getting married anyway, so.
Well, so how did you end up at City College?
San Bernardino Valley?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just decided I wanted to be a teacher, a physical ed teacher. And Valley College was the route to go. I don't know how I found out or why I did that, but I went there my 2 years, got my AA degree.
Mm-hmm. What year did you start?
I went right from high school, 65 to 68. I graduated.
And what did your parents do, like occupation?
Mm-hmm. My father was a machinist for the Santa Fe Railroad, and my mom was a housekeeper. And the interesting thing about her is she was really involved when the war went on, the Second World War. She also worked for the Santa Fe Railroad, which my father worked for when he came back.
Right.
You know, a lot of women covered the jobs of men in that World War.
Do you know what she did during the war?
No, but I actually have a picture somewhere where she was on the, you know, the train and everything, dressed in uniform. It's pretty exciting.
So, are they first generation or second generation or fourth generation?
Yeah, they're second generation. I'm third generation.
Okay. Your dad went to war in World War II or Korean War?
Korean
War or World War II?
World War II. Uh-huh. Which one was later?
Korean War was later.
Yeah, well.
And so did he use his GI Bill for your education?
No, I worked all the way through school, and I got a student loan. Student loans at Long Beach State.
Yeah.
I went to Long Beach State because I was a transfer student.
Right, so you started in 1968 at Long Beach?
Uh-huh. Went right to Long Beach State and was supposed to graduate in 70. And I dropped out and went back east. I got so involved with all these items, these causes. I just dropped out and went to Washington, D.C., work for the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. I came back 2 years later and graduated from Long Beach State in 74.
Wow.
So I did graduate.
At least you got to graduate.
Oh, yeah.
Because it seemed like a lot of the women who got really active didn't.
Just, it was a big burnout. It was just too much.
Right. So can you describe what it was like to go to Long Beach State in 1968?
Well, it was probably the best because we had started up what I believe to be the first Latino group, the UMAS, United Mexican American Students Association. And I went, you know, as a transfer student, as I said, so I went there in summer, and we were all involved, starting to get involved at that time. So it was a very exciting time. Everything was new. Then MECHA developed from that, and then the Chicano Studies Department developed from that, and we were all involved with all of those three kind of developments. So it was very, very exciting.
Right. So it was like the summer of 68 when you got there. UMAS was already going at Long Beach State.
We had just started it, uh-huh.
Okay. And you were part of the forming of UMAS there?
I think I was. I really, Millie, I don't remember. I mean, I know I was an UMAS member, and we were just beginning to, yeah. Metro didn't even exist yet.
And how many people were there, like 8 or?
No, it's about maybe 12, 15 of us.
Okay. And there weren't very many Chicanos or Mexicanos on campus, right?
Well, I initially didn't think there was, uh-huh. but there was probably quite a few more than we really even knew.
Right.
And that would be an interesting project in and of itself to look at the population base, because I've met a lot of people now professionally that went to Long Beach State that were not involved
right.
with UMAS or Mecha, and they're my age.
Right.
And they just went, they did the route of just go through school and didn't get involved.
Right.
So that period of time was very exciting, a lot of dynamics, a lot of involvement, and it wasn't just Long Beach State. We went up and down the state. We went across the nation.
Right.
Chicago, we went to Colorado, went to Texas. Wherever there were conferences on various causes, we were there, so to speak. So Long Beach was our foundation or our home base, but we were very statewide, I mean, United States, nationwide.
Right. Uh-huh. So do you remember what some of the early issues are that you worked on in those early days?
Well, it pretty much started working with the farm workers' cause, the Great Boycott. Very involved with the Vietnam War, which was a little later. Very involved with the Católicos por la Raza, which were organized group against the Catholic Church,
right.
as being an oppressive institution. Very much involved with women's rights as it became, you know, the self-help. Concept in terms of our health,
mm-hmm.
Getting involved with our rights as women, mm-hmm. Population within all these causes. And what was unique again about the time, and probably your time as well, is we as women tend to affiliate or associate with multi-ethnic
mm-hmm.
Groups, the African-American group, the Asian group, the SDS, you know, the Anglo radical group. It seemed that we then develop allegiance not only in broad causes, but with cross ethnic.
Right.
And consequently, I'm very multi ethnic. I don't believe in this pure anything.
So, do you think that was a result of being women activists, or how do you think that kind of alliance or coalitional consciousness emerged?
It was involved with being women in our causes, but also just the general humanitarian causes. They were broader based,
right.
and a lot of Latinos were very nationalistic, very restrictive or limited in the problem. And I don't know, somehow we as women saw it broader than that. We were not nationalists,
right.
my experience. We felt very aligned with blacks or Asians that agreed with our needs and causes and said, yeah, you know, you really are entitled as a woman to have a voice and speak out for your needs. So it we aligned with those people who aligned with us, and it crossed racial and ethnic groups.
So do you remember that is always being true, or did that develop over time in the early 70s? Or
I think it developed over time.
Right.
Because first we, you know, kind of started on our own as IJAS, and that was within Mecha. It was now Mecha.
Right.
So IJAS was predominantly Latina women.
Right. Well,
excuse me.
Do you want to talk about how you started to organize as women within UMAS? And then Mecha, and then how this emerged, the work you did with the IJAS newspaper and stuff?
Well, I think it became very apparent when we went to conferences all over the state, and women were not really being heard. And when we would speak, you know, we weren't listened to. And it became very, very frustrating, and it was started, you know, not only outside but within Mecha, and when we start raising our voices and opposing it or opposition mm-hmm. to not being heard, that's when we start IJAS.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very, very clear, and it still is very clear that you can say something very articulately and no one hears it if they're men. Mm-hmm. But if a man says it, it's actually not only listened to, but it's, wow, what a great idea, you know, let's do that. And so we found that when we were around our own, you know, in terms of women, Latino women and other women, we all listened to each other. We took each other very serious. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, of course, is the sexual object aspect. I mean, that still persists, but, you know, it was hard, not only because we were raised to be sexual objects, you know, we were to be looked at and not listened to. We were more like, you know, to be pretty and not smart. So here were all these women that were really eager to learn and becoming smart. And really not, there was a conflict was we were socialized as well to be feminine and to not be heard and just be seen. And through the movement, we began to be demand to be heard. Right. And it was very aggressive. We were very aggressive. I mean, it was like, you know, I don't know how else to put it, but ball crunching. I mean, it was really very direct, and we took no prisoners. We were very, I mean, there was no middle ground for us. It was extreme almost, to a sense. So, fuck was a big, big word at our time. You know, fuck this, fuck that, you fucking this. I mean, it was just, and it was part of our liberation. I mean, we felt this word liberated us, and it was a real common kind of thing. We became very dirty mouth.
Right. Well, language is really powerful.
Well, you know, later you learn how to use that in a different manner.
But it seemed like there was a language, a political language at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, or a language of the heavies, and that was it, you know? And so.
No, definitely, that's true. That's interesting you bring that up. But it was a real conflict for us in our generation of women to be really socially educated and orientated to being traditional. Mm-hmm. And now, faced with doing everything totally in opposition to that, right. We really were rejected by our families, by our own men and generational men, right. That we were involved with the same causes. So it was a really very, very big conflict for us. It was very similar to the Chinese struggle in terms of the revolution and the re-education process. Right. And consequently, most of us, well, I know I had to be re-educated after going through that process. Back into society, you know, because you know, for a long time it was really very powerful, like you said, heavy to be very aggressive and turn people off, because you expected to already be turned off. So when you knew you were really turned off, it was like somehow empowering to verify that, and that we were not part of the mainstream. Right. So when I went on to law school and then I started practicing law, I had to, you know, really temper that quite a bit. And use whatever I have to get whatever I want to get.
Yeah, but do you feel like you were raised to be traditional?
Oh, absolutely.
You were.
Absolutely.
Okay.
To be a mother and have children.
Right. And the other thing I heard you talking about was that you were talking very early on in the movement. The women were talking and trying to claim a voice within the space of the movement, but you weren't being heard.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the way that the history's written, it seems like women didn't say anything until like the 80s. Like, it's just so backwards, you know? And what I've been finding is that women were saying things all along, but that's been suppressed. It was suppressed at the time, but that suppression's continued into how history was documented.
Yeah, I think more of that, because let me tell you, we were very, very vocal.
Right.
Very vocal body of people. And it was just not, it was not recorded. And that was another reason for the paper that we, in the magazines or the journals, anything that was written was done very deliberately on our part, that never again would that happen, that we did speak, we were very vocal.
Right.
And we wanted to make sure that it would be recorded someday in history.
Right.
That women did speak up.
Right.
You know.
So do you remember how you all started organizing at Long Beach, the specifics of it? How you ended up having a women's group, or?
I tell you the truth, I just remember Anna. Anna was the leader. She was our leader. She just started bringing groups together, to like rap groups. Mm-hmm. And that was real popular then. You had little
support groups?
Sessions. We didn't call it that then, but that's what it was. Mm-hmm. And it just grew to a very powerful group in the sense that we were being heard then more than the men outside of Long Beach State.
Right.
And that's
how
when they buried us, as you know.
How was that? That you were being turned up?
Well, we were very mobile as women. Nothing stopped us. We would just get in our cars and go wherever, and we would be the representatives, self-ordained representatives of Match Out Long Beach State. And that's how a lot of people knew us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the men weren't there, we were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times the men were, it was like a big party to them. Mm-hmm. It was a party for all of us. But I do believe, and I know this probably sounds sexist, women took what was happening more serious. I think as nurturers, and maybe that's a traditional piece, the preservation of a people. We took everything very, very serious.
Right.
Probably too serious.
Right. So then you started off as a rap group, and how did things evolve into?
Well, it's not that we started as a rap group, it's just that it evolved from our involvement.
Right.
In other words, we were attending protest march. We were very involved in the forefront. We were going to conferences throughout the state. We were developing curriculums.
Right.
I mean, most of us were not college-bound people.
Right.
And we were meeting with the deans. And I mean, really, that came way after the confrontational phase, because
right.
there was major confrontation. Throughout the state, you know.
What was that about?
What do you mean?
Confrontation, what was that? And how did that begin?
Well, first it was verbal, and then it became physical.
Right.
You know, like property was destroyed. I mean, we went one time, Mecha Group into Long Beach Library, and we just threw every book down we could within a certain period of time. So we became very disruptive.
Right.
We used to go into the offices and march, like they do now, and demand to be heard
okay.
by the president.
Mm-hmm.
We marched, as you know, in all the marches, Vietnam, farm workers. And it wasn't just a part-time thing. We used to do these, I mean, every night, every weekend. I mean, that was our life.
Yeah.
It was our life. But the confrontational tactics actually, I know, observing the African Americans, they were more effective than the Japanese Americans. It was like, well, maybe if we are as confrontive with administration
mm-hmm.
or institutions, we would also get the same attention, and we did.
Right.
We did. However, like the peaceful marches, we fasted for several causes. We fasted for the farm workers. We fasted for Catholicos. That did get recognition, but it never had the same impact we thought. That maybe more of barreling down doors, unfortunately, banging on doors and demanding we be heard and our rights be addressed, that anything was done.
So then go from meeting as a group to getting the paper out?
Well, it just became more sophisticated because we had a lot of friends in different, like institutions. Like, what I mean that is colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And the people who did know how to write and had print presses and La Raza magazine,
mm-hmm.
they used to let us go in there and use their justifier at the time.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't the kind of machinery
right.
as we have now. But
do you remember who was affiliated with that magazine at the time?
Well, there is somebody that is I've seen. Her name is Pat. Pat. She's actually very active still. Not in what we, you know, did or whatever, but she's, you know, God, what's her last name? I could find out for her. She's married to Gil. Look at this, this is terrible. But she was there, Ruth, God, what was Ruth Robinson? She was Anglo. She was there. Elze, what's his name? This is terrible.
That's okay.
They're around, and I do see them. And there was two major players at La Raza magazine. It was Pat, who I can't remember her last name, Ruth Robinson, and a gentleman who was a professor at Fresno State, and now is involved with healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
He's an administrator. Arisa, no, Aziz. I can find those names out for you. I can.
So then you started, but how did y'all get the idea and started moving forward with it?
Well, we were already, okay, we had another paper before IJAS. It was called El Alacrán, and that was a Long Beach newspaper. I don't know if you've seen it, but the Mecha did it. It was called El Alacrán, and I was a writer for it and involved with it. And
it was, so it was a Long Beach state or Long Beach city?
Long Beach state. Yeah, Long Beach State. So we had a Mecha newspaper, and we used to write for it. And then
what
we just
is it
El Alacrán. And so we just thought that's where we got the idea. It was so easy to do that. Why not do our own? And then Anna was a writer. Anna was a poet, and Anna was always writing. And this was an opportunity, you know, to put together something that focused just on women.
So do you remember the date? So you got there in 68, and you weren't interested in leadership? Anna was the person that she went through the vice presidency and the presidency and all that.
What do you mean?
Of Mecha, wasn't it, I think? I'm not sure. Do you remember that she had run for office or something?
Mm-hmm. No. I don't remember. Anna was always, she was way ahead of all of us.
Right.
She was very outspoken.
So I remember from her interview that she had run for, she was a vice president at one time, and then she ran for presidency, I think in 69, against, and she won maybe, or I'm not sure how that all went, but.
God, I remember, I don't.
But that's when things got a little bit more confrontational around the gender structure.
Mm-hmm.
Struggles.
Mm-hmm.
And so she talked about, there was an effigy and that kind of stuff. Do you remember those days? Or?
Oh, yeah, I do. I remember. I just don't remember her being president. I mean, she always acted like the president anyway. It didn't matter.
That's okay.
I mean, I'm saying that in a real positive way. I mean, she was just naturally born leader.
Right. But I don't think she was ever really allowed to take her... You know, like, I think, according to her, and I think Leticia said, too, that the guys would just meet without her and not tell her there was a meeting.
Yeah, there was a lot of that that went on.
So
it was unfortunate because I think that was 70, 70? Was it
69, 70?
Yeah, 70 is when I dropped out and went back east.
Right.
And it was partly because of that whole fallout. It was... You know, I really believed in the whole movement, and you know, I still do, of course. But I mean, it was the split was really got really very counterproductive.
So do you remember how it developed, or what exactly happened, and over what, or is that all kind of?
Yeah, it's unfortunately blurry. It's just that almost anything we did, we always brought up women, and they hated that. You know, and we
what were their arguments against it
was divisive. It took away from the issues at hand. It was selfish. It was white.
Mm-hmm.
It was a white woman's thing, had to do with us.
And what issues do you remember raising as women?
Well, we felt, first of all, the equality that there needed to be as many women in power positions as there were men.
Mm-hmm.
We felt strongly about that. Maybe that's where Anna ran. We felt our issues of reproductive rights were very important and needed to be addressed. And we brought that up. The church was a big piece because the church, as you know, the Catholic Church we're talking about, had a role for us, and we really believe we were really limited in what we could do because of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So we were anti-Catholic Church.
Do you remember how those issues of reproductive rights came up? Because, or how you know, came to realize that was really important for Chicanas or Mexicans?
Well, yeah, of course. Abortions. We, you know, we were women, and many of us, you know, got pregnant. And we really wanted to further education, and we chose to have an abortion. That was really against the church.
Mm-hmm.
It was really against the movement in the sense of, you know, the family. And we were very adamant about that because we knew that if we did have children, we would be bound to, the priority would be our children, because we were all still very traditional in that sense, that the priority would have been the child. Right. And
were abortions legal, do you remember?
They were not illegal, they were illegal for a while. Because I had friends, we had to fly to Mexico to have abortions in these horrible conditions. So that, it became very close to the heart, it became very close to us. And we start fighting for those rights because the men were going to fight for them. I can't even think of a man. Oh, I do. I do know a man who was very close to us, who used to write in El Alcorán, and then he became a feminist.
Who was he?
And I could remember all this.
That's okay.
But Ana knew him. Salazar was his last name. And he went to Long Beach. But we trained him. We educated him. He was a young Mecha student. We were able to reach him before he got contaminated. And he became a feminist. And he was, there were some men that really sided with us.
All right. Okay, so your issues were education and reproductive rights? And just leadership?
Leadership, having, you know, power, some power.
And that wasn't working in Mecha proper?
Well, it was secondary. Right. It was not, it did not have the same position of importance. And we felt then that was like putting us down as not being important.
Right.
So it was there, but it was not that important. And by not being important, then it didn't get addressed.
Right.
And we thought, hey, it has to be addressed. It's part of the liberation. It's part of us being all free as a people. Mm-hmm. So consequently, you know, most of us, I think, if not all of us, became involved with the women's movement then. Became very involved and were active outside of Mecha.
Right, and creating a women's movement or in the women's movement that was existing?
Well, through IJAS and through, I think it was already existing. It just became more important.
For Latinas or for?
It was existing for women in general, but more of the minority issues were being given preference. And we became more involved with, like, the Women's Free Clinic. We got involved a lot with health issues, women's conferences, and they were, it was mixed. I guess primarily, like the International Women's Year, we took a whole group of women to International Women's Year.
To Nairobi or to?
It was in Mexico City,
right.
1975, to Mexico City. I worked for Chicano Service Action Center for 4 years, and
was that then, during the Mexico City conference?
But all of us that were in Long Beach State went to this, and we were involved with women's rights. Really, it's just that it happened to be Mexico City.
Because I did,
but.
My suspicion has always been that people moved around and formed other coalitions after this moment of the IJAS, you know, 1971, 1972. But I've been trying to trace that, and so that's helpful.
We, unfortunately, IJAS did not, I mean, I don't know how long it lasted, but it was,
right.
It was almost like a phase.
Right.
And then we went into women's issues as a whole and women's organizations.
Right. So you developed the newspaper and you did that. Then. There was that regional conference, the Cal State LA conference in 1971, and the Houston conference. Did you go to that?
Mm-hmm.
The first.
I went to the Houston conference.
The first one, the 1971 one, the one where there was the big walkout.
Went to that one. Yeah.
Did you go with the group with Anna?
Uh huh. We were all there.
Okay. And what do you remember from going to Houston?
I remember a split.
Right.
Isn't that terrible? That's all I remember. There was a big split among the women.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Do you think that was a turning point for campus activism, or that you had all kind of graduated out of that? Because it seems like that after it was a kind of a lull, and then Encuentro Femenil, they started in 1973. But you had left.
We had all either graduated, left, or in our own careers. It was more chronological. So I got really involved, like I said, I was still involved. All of us, I think, were very much involved with women's rights, but in different methods. Like, I was involved with the Women's Center,
right.
And the Chicano Service Action Center. and it developed. It had already been there, but we took it to another dimension. That was the liberal, radical kind of level.
Yeah. When was the, it was founded in
1974. But it was already under commission.
Right.
It just wasn't incorporated.
Right.
So, see, this is part of that whole radicalism. We demanded to be our own entity. We incorporated.
Right.
So I was involved with that.
So it was, it got a certain kind of autonomy then from commission after that.
That's right.
And what
its own identity.
Right. So the center then, what did it do? Chicana Service Action Center? It's in East LA or downtown?
It's downtown, right. And in East Los Angeles. Well, I think one piece that's really significant there, which people don't like to hear, is it split off not only for its own autonomy,
from
but it, from commission, but it split off for political reasons.